So I actually left the party early, went back, and stayed up half drunk till 5 a.m. Rewriting the chapter. So I wrote the whole chapter 3,000 words during the day, went to this party, came back half drunk, rewrote the whole thing, 3,500 words. It was like my most words in a day, and I was miserable and didn't enjoy it at all. And that's one of the only times I've fully like rewritten something.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road. Hi, and welcome everyone to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that invites guests that are friends with Actus. With me today is Excarnation, author of
Friends of Act.
Reborn as a Mnemonic Tree.
Right. I'm actually going to Japan and Korea next month with Actus.
Oh, cool.
Traveling Asia, so that's quite fun. That's funny you brought that
up. Is that where you're going to like renew your like, I don't know, Satanistic ritual that you did to like both at the same time hit it really big with new stories?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So tell me more about that.
Well, we were just in January, just this month, we were traveling around the whole of Europe alongside a few other authors.
Cool.
We went to like Malta, Rome, Italy, whatever, Spain. Because the fun of being an author is you can travel. You can write from anywhere, so it doesn't really make sense to just sit alone at home. I've done that for a whole year, writing Tree for 12 months straight almost. We decided to go traveling. Mm-hmm. And for Actus, it's because he's ending university, finally. Mm-hmm. So he's free, and he doesn't want to stay in America, and he wants to travel. Mm-hmm. So I was like, hell yeah, why not?
Cool, nice. So, but, you know, evil rituals aside, we were talking about how you got into writing Mnemonic Tree, and you mentioned that this is the part that you need to repeat.
Yes, I need to repeat.
Your evil origin story.
Evil origin story. Yeah. So Tree is actually my seventh novel. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that because even if you look at my account, the novels are still there. But, a lot of people don't really notice that. They think Tree was just a hit success out of the gate. But there was a lot of foreshadowing to it. I wrote a story. My very first one was about a guy who became a god of creation. Mm-hmm. It got 8 followers or something, 16,000 words I wrote of it. I sent it to a friend who was studying English at Oxford, and he said it was the biggest pile of garbage he'd ever read, and that I should quit writing. So I did for a bit. And then I was reading machine-translated Zanzia novels, and I wanted to write my own. So I wrote 30,000 words of one. I posted it to Scribble Hub. It got 100 followers, and it got 30,000, 20,000 or something on Raw Road. Mm-hmm. I dropped that after a while because the thing is I picked up writing because I ran out of things to read. Mm-hmm. So I'm a reader. I don't read anymore, but I was a reader first, a writer second. So I just write, like, I'd write a chapter once every 3 weeks, you know, and it would be 1,000 words long. I didn't understand how a chapter could be longer than 1,000 words. It didn't make sense to me. So I just write like occasionally, and it had no, I didn't even have my spell checker or grammar checker turned on Word or something. So, I had horrendous ground. Like, you know, there was no commas. It was just all full stops occasionally, if I remembered capital letters occasionally. Yeah, horrendous. Then I wrote a novel called Nightwalker. It was my first success. And the reason I put this is because it is actually a success. If you look at the stats on Raw Road, getting like 400, it got 400 followers.
Oh, nice.
Is actually decent for a lot of people. So I don't want to, say that it's nothing. But at the time, it felt like a big deal. I wrote it for a whole year. It got 90, I wrote like 90,000 words of it. So almost a full book, almost a full book of it. It was also the first novel where I started Patreon on, and I got I got about 5 Patreons total. And every time I got one, I ran downstairs and told my parents. I was like, oh my God, look, someone's giving me $5 to read this thing. But eventually the problem is I had no idea how to write a story. So the power scaling was horrendous. The guy was a god, went from basically really weak to a literal godly being by chapter 32, and my chapters were 1,000 words long. And I just didn't know what the plot was supposed to be. It turned into a sci-fi novel because he was too powerful for the planet, and he started world hopping and stuff. I had no idea what was going on. I had no notes of the story. I didn't even realize I had no notes of the story until afterwards when I tried to come back to rewrite it.
Okay.
I literally searched my Google Docs for my notes sheet, you know, to find the character names, the stats, everything. Nothing. There was no note sheet. There never was one. I didn't even realize that. I was literally just writing gut, like just whatever came to my head, no plot continuity.
But that's cool.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it has a 3.5 rating in all categories on Railroad.
One guy rated it like 2 and a 1.5.
So someone rated it a 1-star and said, I demand a refund on a free novel. which lives rent free in my head still to this day. So I remember getting that review, and literally I was on holiday in Spain at the time, and I went and showed my mom it. I was like, look, this guy wants a refund on his time. Like it was a free novel. He only read 8 chapters and he wanted a refund. And I was like, and my mom was like, well, are you going to give him a refund? And I'm like, I don't know how to give him a refund. Like, what do I give him? Do I send him a DM and apologize? Like, I was confused. This was the tipping point where I started taking writing slightly seriously. So I quit. I dropped that novel and I saw another one. And this one was called Damien Nightshade. It's the first ever novel I signed. Mm-hmm. It got 800 followers on Railroad, so nice. Doubled our follower count, and 2,000 on Scribble Hub. I think 2,000 cool. followers on Scribble Hub. It was actually a big Scribble Hub novel for some reason. Mm-hmm. It's basically just a reborn into a game character that you've played before, like a side villain character.
So a little bit like
Jack Among Snakes.
Jack Among Snakes, or something I've started looking into recently was Memoirs of a Small Town Villainess.
Yep,
Reader, that kind of
example.
Stuff.
That's mm-hmm. a good example. Yeah, so I wrote that, and that was the first time I was trying to take writing kind of seriously. I was getting $100 a month on Patreon, and I was in university at this time. It's my last year of university for computer science, and I used that money to buy boba tea. So it was my boba tea fund, mm-hmm. and I took it very seriously. I wrote more back then, I feel like, than I do now. Like, I would literally write every day without fail. I would write 1,500 word chapter every single day for like 6 months straight. And the only day I stopped and broke my streak was when my housemate at the time wanted to go blind on a blind dating thing at a nearby. And it was and the time slot for it was at the same time that I usually do my writing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, fuck it. You know, I'll do it later or whatever. So we went on this stupid dating thing. It was a waste of time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And that was the day that broke my streak.
And also your heart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, actually, it's a whole story. But yeah, no, I don't want to drag my friend through the mud. But yeah, no, okay. It was not my fault. But, okay.
1,500 words each day. That's not bad. That's actually really good. I really wish I could get that far because, you know, I have all this other shit going on, you know, like the podcast and everything.
Yeah.
So.
But no, it was going fine. And then I wrote that for a while. And then I was like, I was actually talking to Melis. At the time, and he because I actually this is a very known historic event that has occurred on Raw Road, but because he's made it's a big thing in our circle that you might not know. I back then I was still a reader mainly, even though I was writing, and I went on to Salvos, and I thought in my head that big authors were kind of like big YouTubers where they got thousands of comments a day and they wouldn't see individual comments. So I commented on chapter like 4 of Salvos or something. I said, when does this get good? So I was reading Salvos and I wasn't enjoying it, but I saw it was the top one, and I was like, surely, and I like Non-Human a lot. So I thought, yeah. when does it start? I don't know what I was hoping for. If I saw that comment on my novel, I would ban and block the person. I don't even know what I was looking for. I was actually just annoyed, and I just typed, when does this get good? Turns out I typed that right when Melis was coming back from a funeral or something.
Oh no!
And he decided that I would be the target of his anger that day.
His wrath.
Yeah, so he not only blocked me and everything, but I also woke up the next day to him having found my Discord server and atting me in the Discord server saying, fuck you, and then leaving the Discord server. But the craziest part about that is I only linked my Discord server twice in random chapters of Damien Nightshade, which was my vampire novel. I had like, I think 120 chapters out, and I think I linked it once on like chapter 60 and once on chapter 90, my Discord server, because I forgot to link it. So he'd gone through every single chapter, found the chapter where there was a Discord link, clicked it, gone, told me to, you know, and then left.
What's the dedication?
Yeah, and then he banned me from every Discord server he had power in. So I found I was blacklisted from every server before, without even knowing it. So when I finally signed this vampire novel to Aethon for Yonder, and I joined the Aethon channel, I heard all these people saying that there were like these other servers like Silverpen, And I tried to join them and I found out I was banned and I didn't know why I was banned. It's because I've been pre-banned from all of them. Yeah, that's a big origin story thing.
Hell hath no fury.
Yes.
Like a cute kitten scorned.
Yeah, so that's quite funny.
Yeah, oh man, yeah. Wow, harsh. Did you make up with Melis? I mean, obviously you did because
No, we're great. We're great friends now. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Great friends. I mean, I was just traveling Europe with him just recently, so yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he told me to rewrite that 400 follower thing, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. He was like, just touch it up, self-publish it on Amazon, right? No big deal. So I was like, you know what? That's a great idea. So I went back to try and, you know, because I wanted to try self-publishing, I wanted to try Amazon. Mm-hmm. So I went back to reread it and republish it. And I hated everything I read. It was the most awful thing I'd ever read. So what I did was I was doing quite heavy edits, but I told Melis that I had like 90 chapters ready and I was just going to do light editing. So I was re-uploading it to Railroad because at the time I had a tiny following. I didn't have to do the 20K dump or any of that crap. Mm-hmm. So I was just posting the chapters like as I edited them. And I think I was on holiday as well at the time. Again in Spain. So I was just editing a chapter, basically rewriting it, but they were short chapters, so it didn't take too long. Mm-hmm. And then posting them and then going off and doing something else. And before I knew it, I had like four chapters done, like mm-hmm. barely 10K words or I can't remember. And then Melis shouted it out from Salvos. And I woke up and I had like 300-400 followers on it, mm-hmm. on this repost. And I was on Rising Stars, even though I only had like 10K words, which is, you know, and I was like, why did you do that? And he said, you know, what's the problem? I was like, I only have 10K words out. And he's like, but you have 90, you know, just post the chapters, just edit, you know, what are you waiting around for? And I said, no, I need to do a full rewrite now because I edited the early chapters. And I made too many changes. So the next chapter didn't make any sense. So I was like, I need to rewrite this novel. So then I was like, this is screwed. So I basically just hunkered down and tried to get as many chapters out of it as possible. And it ended up topping Rising Stars at like 2.5K followers or something.
Awesome.
But it literally, it went up and then it just died instantly. It mm-hmm. got to like sixth place because he shouted me out before I had 10K words. It completely screwed my algorithm. Which is why to this day, whenever someone in like one of the servers asks, mm-hmm. you know, how do I do posting? I say, just put 20K out because if you don't, you know, you never know what will happen, and then you can just get screwed, and your run is doomed.
You get visited by the bad shout-out fairy.
Yeah, just one guy shouts you out, and it's doomed. His shout-out wasn't even that strong. It had good conversion, but it wasn't even that strong. It was just that if you do that, it just screws up your whole run. So.
Can you just imagine this, like, short loon going around looking for new novels, going like, I'm going to ruin this guy's run.
Yeah, literally, I could, you know, if I didn't like someone, you know, and they posted a new novel, you know, if they were too slow, I could, you know, show them some love and
be quicker, nerd. Okay, we're getting mean. Yeah. Okay, yeah. No, but cool. So, and then did you do anything with it?
So the vampire novel was sold to Aethon for this Yonder program. Mm-hmm. Then the Netherborn, the reposted one that got 2.5K, I sold to Aethon. And then I was looking for computer science jobs because I'd just finished uni. Mm-hmm. And I promised my parents I'd find a job, but I wasn't looking for jobs. I was trying to make writing a full-time thing because I found it more fun than coding. And I started writing Tree. Mm-hmm. Tree was actually just completely random out of the blue. Written. The origin was that I was reading Tree of Aeons, mm-hmm. and as I put in a Raw Road forum post before, I was reading Tree of Aeons for the third time or second time or something. I was doing a reread, and I loved it so much. I was like, oh, I want to go read another Tree book. I searched Raw Road. There were none. And I was like, wait a second. Tree of Aeons has 20,000 followers across Raw Road and Scribble Hub and does not have a single other competitor, like at all, not even mm-hmm. close. And I looked at his Patreon and I was like, he's making like enough money that if I made that much money, I think it's like 2,000 a month or something. So if I make that much money, I don't have to get a job as a computer scientist. So I was like, you know, I could write a Tree book. You know, I like Dungeon Core stories, and Tree books are kind of just reskin Dungeon Core. So I literally just got in a random sprint with a fellow author. And
shout out.
Yeah. Oh, Plutus. Immortality Starts with Generosity.
Nice. Cool.
I got in a sprint with him, and he was a bigger author than me at the time. And we both wrote a sign-in system novel. Mm-hmm. So the goal was, we were just chatting about sign-in system novels, and we were like, oh, what if we just wrote one, you know, for fun, just on this random day in a sprint. Mm-hmm. And he wrote his, he wrote a sign-in system novel, and I wrote mine, and mine was, Tree. Mm-hmm. And because I literally just read Tree of Aeons earlier that day, and I was like, you know what, I still got the Tree novel idea, and I think this would work.
Cool.
I literally opened my Word doc, and I needed a name for my main character, so I got a random name generator open, mm-hmm. and got Ashlock. I was literally like, tree based names, and it, you know, came out of Ashlock, and I was like, great, awesome. You ran with that. So everything, this is why, you know, you said that reading early Tree felt a little flat. Everything up until maybe chapter 30 was just completely made up, like to the point where it was just I didn't know, you know, I had all these mysteries. I laid a lot of Chevlock guns.
That's cool,
I
made
a lot of things. I had no idea what any of it, what I was doing. I didn't know who this what character was. I didn't know why this person was dying. I didn't know anything. People were like, oh, why is his name Ashlock? You know, and there was a literal comment chain that was like 100 comments long where they were theory crafting why his name was Ashlock, when the answer was literally, the random name generator made it, and it sounded cool.
Could have been worse. Could have been like Birch Gerald.
Yeah, could have been worse. It was quite a good name, I think.
Ashlock is a pretty fun name for a tree.
Pretty good name.
Cool.
Yeah, obviously it blew up beyond my expectations. I was hoping for 4 to 5K followers. My plan was, I had all of these shoutouts lined up. Mm-hmm. And my plan, including one from Tree of Aeons, because I was mildly I was friends with Thanos, and I had all of these shoutouts lined up. I'm like, if I could just get 4K followers, you know, the deals behind the scenes. You know, if you just get like 4 or 5K followers, you can get an advance and a deal big enough that equals a graduate salary. You know, here in the UK, wages are awful, like 30K a year graduate salary. So for a
Standards. I remember that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're horrendous. They're literally awful. So I just need to make 30K. If I can make 30K from everything combined, all of these deals that I signed, then I could be like, well, why do I need a computer science job? I'm making the same amount writing.
Yeah. Awesome.
So that was my goal. And then Tree blew up way bigger than that.
You would say it grew bigger than your expectations?
Yeah. It went bigger than my expectations. I only wanted 4 to 5K followers.
You didn't get
but it got that in like five days.
No pun appreciation?
No,
it was a well-rooted. It was a very well-rooted pun.
Oh right.
And it I was saying it grew.
It grew
because it's a tree.
Yeah.
Anyway. No.
Moving on.
Okay, I mean, obviously, like I'm looking at your Patreon right now, and I'm not going to mention how much money you're earning because it's right there, and people can actually go to your Patreon and look at it and look at your really cool offerings, because I'm seeing here you can read all of books 2 and 3. And in progress chapters of book 4. It's pretty cool. So yeah, people should check it out. It's Patreon/.
That's for the Amazon readers. And then I did a poll yesterday. I'll just bring it up so I can actually see the numbers. So I saw that my Patreon was growing, and even though I was posting less to Railroad, and I thought that maybe it was Amazon readers were coming in, you know, because obviously I published Amazon recently, and some novels have seen Amazon growth and some don't. I was really hoping I'd be one of them, but there were early signs that I wasn't. I was like, I was really unfortunate. But then I saw that I grew by like $500. So I was really happy. I was like, okay. Maybe the Amazon readers are coming in. Turns out I actually get less Amazon. I have less Patreons from Amazon than I do from Scribble Hub and Pirate Sites.
Pirate Sites? Shout out to Pirate Sites.
I'm one of the biggest Pirate Site novels in the world, actually.
That is... funny.
I have 7,000 followers on the Pirate Sites, and I got the admin in my Discord server to one of the Pirate Sites, and I made him. I'm the only novel on his entire site that has my Patreon linked, and it admits that it's not a translation. So every other novel, it claims it's a translation from Chinese or something. It pretends it's a they're doing hard work, they're translating it. For mine, it says it's an English novel. Here's the Patreon. Here's the original Raw Road. Link, and it has like 5,000 followers on there or something.
I've been wondering because I really wanted to like think about doing like a visual novel or something, right? So I was thinking like these get pirated like a lot, kind of like almost RPG kind of like clicky things. And so I was thinking like, hey, how about this? Like, as I will only release new, I will only release new chapters every X days if I get past a certain, like if I'm over this certain point of income. Because that means like, if you, even if you pirate it, you're not going to get anything new unless we got, unless someone subscribes. Might as well be you.
Yeah. But
I'm not quite sure if that works. For the, you though, I think that's actually amazing.
The thing about pirating is if someone's going to pirate something, there's only two reasons they're doing it. One is because they don't have the money. Or don't want to, you know, they don't care, right? They don't care what the source is. They don't care about giving you money, whatever. The other thing is they're just clueless. They just don't know where the original source is. So my thoughts is I don't care if someone reads on a pirate site. As long as they know that there's an original source that they can go read. So long as they know there's the Amazon book. As long as they have knowledge that it's a pirate version and there's other, there's another free version that they could read, then I don't mind. Because, you know... they were going to pirate it anyways, you know. That's my opinion. I don't think piracy is good, right? As long as people know that that it's not a translation, they're not publishing, they're not claiming things, they're not, for example, they're not changing the sort. You know, there's this whole thing on Amazon right now where what they do is they just repost your novel onto Amazon and they use an AI to just change all the names and everything. That's not fine. But people who just repost my free, let's say I've uploaded free content to Roller, right? If they take that free content and they put it somewhere else on a pirate site. Okay. And then, but then they link and say, look, hey, look, this is the original source material, like everywhere. This is what I have on the admin. This is what I force the admin to do, right? This isn't the same for everyone. This is just for me.
Yeah.
And I think that should be for everyone. You know, I don't care that it's on the pirate site that much. You know, obviously, I like views on Raw Road or whatever. But as long as there's links everywhere, it's like this is, you know, you're reading the worst version. You're reading the version that's played with ads on this crappy website. There's another version that's a lot better where you'd actually help the author. Here it is. And if they still don't click the link, then they weren't going to click the link. They like being on the pirate site, whatever. You know, they're a lost customer.
They wouldn't have been a customer in the first place, right?
Yeah, they wouldn't have been a customer in the first place.
Yeah, okay.
There's this guy on YouTube Shorts a lot who talked about how he beat piracy for his video game. And basically, he noticed that people were pirating a lot in Brazil. So what he did was he just made it incredibly cheap in Brazil. So the game costs the same amount on every store, except in Brazil, it costs like 20p, right? And he noticed that he actually now gets half of his entire game sales from Brazil. And it's just because he made it affordable to them. You know, there was no reason to pirate the novel and go through all the loops and to get the version that was crap when you could just get it for 20p or 20 cents or whatever currency. So, you know, there's that as well.
Cool.
To keep in mind.
Yeah, they do that a lot for the big published games, right? So they kind of sell it for less cost in other countries. So, for example, Turkey. Poland, Russia, where they know that people are going to pirate it otherwise, or because people just don't have like lower income. Like $50 might not seem much to you or I for like a new video game. I mean, still, it's a lot, $70 they're charging now, right? Which I understand to some degree. But for some people, that's like more than half their like monthly salary if you adjust
like living costs. And so all they're going to do is they're just going to pirate it.
Yeah.
Or not play.
Yeah. The one downside to that is people are just going to use VPN and then they're going to buy it for cheaper by using VPN.
It's a constant battle.
Yeah.
It's a constant
battle. And in the end, like, all you can really do is try and be friendly with people, because the more you rage, the less you're going, the less readers are going
to
have.
Yeah. Because my issue with the pirates was I actually tried to get my publisher to do something about them. And they basically informed me that they had in the past. There was this whole thing where they actually put in a lot of effort and got Primal Hunter taken off all the pirate sites. They went through and they, you know, they did all the things. They whatever. And they finally got all of the sites to agree to remove Primal Hunter. Right? Mm-hmm. They removed Primal Hunter for 2 months, and then it was back up again. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want. They were just like, well, you know, it's back up again, and if we can go through all this effort to get it removed again for maybe a month or two, but they'll just put it back up again. And we can't do this for every novel. You know, we have all these novels, almost every novel that we have is pirated. So we can't do this for every novel. It's impossible. So you can try and do something yourself. So I tried to do something myself and it worked. And rather than going in all rage and being like, hey, look, man, you know, take it off your site and threatening him, because that doesn't work. I was like, hey, let's reach an agreement. You know, you put my Patreon link on there. And I'll let you, you know, I won't threaten legal action or you know, I won't do anything. I'll just let you be.
And we'll be cool, right? That's it.
We'll be cool. We'll be cool. He did say he would remove it. One part of the agreement was he said he would remove it once I went to Amazon.
That didn't happen.
And then I sent him five messages being like, hey, dude, can you remove it? I'm on Amazon. Hey. And he just ignored me. So, you know, there's, you know.
You did your part.
Communications broke down. And I never actually had any plans to pursue legal action. So we're now in a stalemate.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. I mean, the worst thing that can happen is like Amazon coming after you, but I mean, could be worse. I mean, piracy is really, really bad, but it could be worse. Could be steampunk piracy. It will never grow old. Okay.
So will never grow old.
You were talking earlier about, you know, being a reader first and then a writer, and now you're more a writer than you're a reader, which I think it's a very good reason to write just because you write the books that you would want to read and no one else is writing them, which is great.
It very much helps if you like the things that people want to read as well.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like I write non-human, which is a niche. Mm. You know, that's the only thing I want to write. It's the only thing I do write is non-human books, really. And they have a lot smaller ceiling than other books do. But it's what I like to write. And I'm lucky that the thing I want to write isn't steampunk pirates or cyberpunk or, you know, female lead. Is a debuff, unfortunately. And you know, things like that. On Royal Road, we went through, there was this big argument a while ago, people being like, you know, female lead is doomed, blah, blah, blah. So someone ran the numbers and did the stats. And basically around 30% of novels on Royal Road or something are female lead. Mm-hmm. I think it worked out. And then 30% of the top 20 in all categories, you know, followers, you know, in each category pretty much was female lead. But the problem with female lead is if you actually look on Royal Road, not a single one except Azeroth Healer pretty much is the only big one that was stabbed when KU did everything correctly, right? Mm. The other ones either went wide and didn't go KU, or they aren't posted on Amazon at all, or they didn't even run Patreons or whatever. So it's a very, very small sample size of, it's literally Azeroth Healer and Salvos, I think, are the only two big. Oh, and Beneath the Dragon's Eye Moon recently. Yeah, Salvos and Beneath the Dragon's Eye Moon both went non-KU for a very long time.
Yeah.
And whatever. And then, you know, Salvos and Hero was really the only one that launched and did everything as they should correctly from the start.
Mm.
Kind of. And they did pretty well. So that, you know, there's a ceiling, but it's definitely harder for us to see.
Yeah. If it's worth it. I mean, 33%, like, I'm not going to go like, it's still not 50, because if people aren't writing it, people aren't writing it, right? It's okay. I'm not going to friggin' Scribble Hub or Wattpad and go like, why is everything here vampires? Like, it's makes sense. But it's actually good to know.
I mean, if only 30% of novels written, if only 30% of novels written a female lead, and then 30% of the top novels a female lead, it kind of correlates a bit. And also the most followed novel almost is Azeroth Healer, which is female lead. Power fantasy, so it can be done.
And looking at the most followed one, it's actually even like a deconstruction of the traditional male power fantasy, where he really like rejects power. He's like, no, I want to be
farming time.
I want to be farming, and it's ironically a very well. It's all about, you know, being a provider and all that kind of stuff, right? But it's at the same time a very very big feminine novel. If I'm digging out my old education, like there's stuff about like growing things and, you know, tilling the soil and all that kind of stuff. And the whole like Gaia aspect that comes into it too. The fact that you have a chicken that's called Big D is counterbalancing that a little bit. But anyway, cool. I was going to ask you before we got into this tangent, what's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer? Well, it's a new ad. If you're interested in having your story shouted out on this podcast, please reach out to me under critrpg.podcast@gmail.com. For now, I just finished the first book in my own series, Torchbearer. If you like a slow burn story about weak to OP main characters, mixing magic and technology and numbers going up, you might also enjoy this one. You can find the link to my link tree down below. And that's all for now. Thank you very much for listening and or watching, and let's get on with the show.
Best advice I've ever gotten as a writer. When readers give you feedback, you don't take what they say at face value. because they can't tell you exactly what's wrong, but they can give you a vibe check in a way. So if a reader says, I hate this arc, right? They might not hate that exact arc. What they might have hated was the build-up to the arc. They might have hated the arc, the shift in tone from the last arc to this arc. There's other things at play. So if a lot of people, if a big majority of people are saying something, you can get the general vibe. But they might all be like, they might all be wrong about what it is exactly that they hate. They might be like, I hate this character, right? I hate this character in this scene. But really, okay, this is a crazy example. I had a villain. And everyone said they disliked, not disliked the villain because the villain's supposed to be dislikable, but they really particularly didn't like the character, right? And then they said it was for a load of random reasons. And then I made the character hot. I'm not even joking. That she got she stole this pill that my group were making that makes your skin look better, right? And I just described her as now she changed from this like war torn, she has like scars and she's rugged. She looked very rugged, and it put this image in people's head where she really looked like some sort of like hag. Right. Mm. And then now I said, yeah, now she's like, now she looks fine. And everyone's like, oh, I love this character. This character's great. And I was like, so it was never, it's just a weird thing that some people just don't hate something for the thing they say they hate it for. It's actually something else. So, it can be really hard to deconstruct what it actually is that people aren't liking.
It's super weird. So. That's super weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh, but it's pretty good. When you were, did you ever read or watch any material about improving your craft or something?
I tried. I watched quite a lot. I watched some, not quite a lot. I watched some of like Brandon Sanderson's lectures, and I'll be honest, none of it was very helpful.
Okay.
No, offense to Brandon Sanderson or something, but it's sort of like everything he was saying, I sort of acquired by reading a lot. If I'm like, I go completely, because I'm a discovery writer, and I go off sort of as Volk, that's another author, termed it degen meter. I'm just guided by my degen meter that I've honed from just what I want to write and what I've read a lot of, guides me on my path. And you watch these lectures and they go on and on about all of this stuff, and a lot of it's hard because the advice they're giving is for a different type of novel. They do trilogies and trad and that sort of stuff. It's hard to find good info about how to write a good web serial. Because web serial is a very niche space, and also a lot of the people that are in it aren't very open to sharing, either through just that they're authors and they're introverts and they're not really interested in doing podcasts and things like this, or they're just they're too busy. They're too busy writing stupid amounts of words per day, and they don't have time.
I actually, now that you mention this, people might be interested in this because I've started a series where I invite authors of some renown, and we just basically talk for 2 hours about stuff like, hey, characters in lit RPG or characters in web serials, and how do you write that? Like, what's important there? It's not a comprehensive guide, so I'm not like standing in front of a board and lecturing people, but I think it's going to start and help. But I definitely want to like think about doing that. Did you know that Seth Ring has like this really, really, really good and long going series about how to write for web serials?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've watched quite a few of Seth's videos.
That's so good.
Met him at Person at Dragon Con and stuff. He's a cool guy.
Well, that actually brings me to my next question. Is there one thing you would go back to and change?
In
your novels, because you said you're a discovery writer, and I found being a discovery writer myself, after I finished the book, I was like, okay, now I understand what the fuck is going on here. So I need to go back and actually do a rewrite.
It's very tempting to go into rewrite hell. It really is. For all my other novels, I've wanted to rewrite them other than Tree. So all of my previous ones, I went through a period where I'd hit a wall and I'm like, I need to rewrite this. I need to, I want to redo this. I've rewritten Netherborn or Nightwalker, as it was known first, like 3 times. For not much more gain, to be honest.
Yeah.
And for Tree's different. not because it's my magnum opus or something, but it's actually just because I'm on such a, I wouldn't say brutal, but I'm on such a consistent schedule, just plowing forward, that there isn't time to look back. Like the amount of, there is, by trying to fix something, even the thought of going back and changing something, like for my Amazon releases, I do no edit, like not no editing, but you know, there's just grammar and spelling changes. I don't, I think for the first book, I plugged 3 tiny plot holes by just changing like one sentence. You know, I'd have a character that contradicts what they said. You know, they'd say, oh, I did this. And then like 10 chapters later, they said, oh, I've never done that. You know, so I fixed that. But other than that, the editing is very minimal because Tree was so discovery written as well. I don't want to go back and fix things because there's so little, so much of it is just sort of not built on sand, but it's very, it's kind of like a house of cards. And I don't even remember half the stuff that happened 600,000 words ago. So if I go back and edit it, I don't remember if that's going to have a, you know, a knock-on effect, because I might have had a character offhandedly mention something. This is why I have beta readers, just for anyone reading, watching this, who's a fan of Tree. I do have a team of beta readers and they keep me in line. I have some crazy guys that have reread the story like 8 times and they've made detailed notes about everything and they tell me when I mess up, which is why there's actually decent consistency. But without them, I don't remember what happened. So I don't want to go back and edit it because I'm just plowing forward. I'm just looking on the horizon. I see the future of the series. I see what can we improve, where can we go. I don't think, damn, I wish I could go back and rewrite that 240,000 word book. You know, that's posted, that's published, that's gone. That too many people have seen it. There's no hope. You know, if there was a bad arc, there's a bad arc. It is what it is. I don't have the capabilities, the memory, or the willpower to go back and edit it and change it. It was good enough. I didn't lose all my readers. My retention survived. It should survive on Amazon, is my thought. If I had a chapter or like a few chapters. I have, there was one time where I fully rewrote a chapter. I was actually at my mum's birthday and I posted it and I went to the birthday party and I was getting these comments and I just got 40 comments on Patreon or something. They were like, this is horrendous. This is awful. You know, they hated the chapter basically. So I actually left the party early, went back and stayed up till, well, half drunk till 5 a.m. Rewriting the chapter. So I wrote the whole chapter 3,000 words during the day, went to this party, came back half drunk, rewrote the whole thing, 3,500 words. So I wrote like, it was like my most words in a day and I was miserable and didn't enjoy it at all. And that's one of the only times I've fully like rewritten something. So I don't like rewriting. I don't like fixing.
I kind of do, but not if it just becomes like a purpose in and of itself. So I found that after the end of the novel, I'm now way more familiar with the motivations of these characters because I did sort of a mystery. Because my main character has had like a long past and is important to the current events. So I don't know what happened in the past. So at the end of the novel, I knew more than I knew at the beginning. So the character should have maybe behaved a bit differently at the start. And that's what I'm fixing right now. And I think it's fun, but I can understand how
editing was a lot more... even enjoyable, a lot more of something I wanted to do when I was still improving a lot as an author. I'm not saying I'm an amazing author now. I'm improving every day, still pushing the limits. But back then, it got to the point where I'd write 10 chapters, and I was visibly better by the 10 chapters later than I was before. Yeah. Whereas nowadays, it's kind of like I could write a whole book, and I look back on my content from, you know, 80 chapters ago, and I compare the 2 chapters, and they're not like, you know, different enough that it's worth going back and editing.
I mean, that's great.
I've kind of reached my natural sort of level of you know, capability of in writing where I'm happy. You know, I'm like, this is a solid baseline. I'm happy with this.
When did you hit your 1,000,000 word mark?
Recently?
I think I have 1,000,000 words. Not on Tree, but in general.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Recently, I think. Like, cool. I think I have like 1.1, 1.2. Tree's almost 700k, and then I have 240k of the vampire book, 140 of Netherborn, and then, you know, if you include the crap novels I wrote before, those total like 150. So I'm not that. I'm just over 1,000,000.
Cool. I mean, people always say, "Hey, it's the 1,000,000 word mark that actually, you know, gets things really rolling." Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. I think for me, it was a lot of rewriting. Like, I think Rewrite Hell is not great if you're trying to make money. Mm-hmm. But at the time I was in uni and stuff, and I didn't really care or know this was a career, really. So I was just rewriting novels over and over again. And as you said, you know, you get to the end of the novel, and I wouldn't say I was rewriting to try and make the story better. Mm-hmm. But in retrospect, all that did was make me a better author, because I'd get to the end of the book and I'd analyze why, you know, this plot line is just a mess, and how can I, you know, in the future make a more coherent plot line and whatever, and better motivations for villains and all of this.
Yeah, it really is more about finding out, improving yourself, basically. Nothing to add, really. Like, it really is just all about improving yourself, and every word you write kind of makes it better. So yeah. I'm actually still enjoying that part, because I was still on this like very steep learning curve when I started writing Torchbearer. And to be honest, like I didn't really give a fuck at the start. And then when I relaunched it actually did pretty well. And now I'm thinking like, okay, maybe I should start the novel a bit differently to give people a better indication of where it's going to go at the end, and also smooth out some of the rough parts. So I'm not doing a complete rewrite. People always think like, hey, it's a complete rewrite and you know, doing everything from scratch. I'm not.
I think when you're sort of starting out, or you're still smaller, when you don't have as much pressure, you know, not just with actual readers, but publishers as well, breathing down your neck with deadlines.
Oh yeah.
It's a lot easier to go down that rewrite route, and I think it's great. I think it's not maybe the most efficient use of time, but it's not bad, because you've got this existing framework to build upon. You don't have to spend as much time coming, you know, you like the world, you know the characters, you know, so you sort of rewrite it, and you might not even have to completely start from scratch. You've got some chapters already. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, a rewrite might bring it up from, I don't know how many followers you had, but for me it was like, you know, 400 followers to 2.5k. it's a good leap. Mm-hmm. But it's not a leap where, you know, it's not like if I did a rewrite of a 400 follower fic, it would then be tree, you know. You got to start from scratch to do that. But it's good for improvement.
I went from 200, like exactly 200, to now 1,273, which I think is pretty good. And then we'll see if the curve at the start isn't quite as steep. It's not steep right now, but that's my point. I want to write to have fun as a hobby.
Yeah.
And I'm doing that, so I'm being successful all the time, because I'm succeeding in my goal and having fun.
I miss that. I miss the life of just writing whenever you wanted, because it was fun. Because writing was a hobby for me, and then it became a job. And it's a fun job, but it's a job.
Okay. Good point. Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking about doing some other stuff that's maybe more on market. But I don't think I will ever be able to really write like an on-brand male power fantasy thing.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I guess I kind of do, but like also not. But yeah, I also like people like, you should start writing a System Apocalypse or something. System Apocalypse. I don't really like System Apocalypses. I don't really read them. I don't enjoy them. So I don't really want to write one.
If I do a System Apocalypse, it's going to be the Defiance of the Fall, but we're going to skip everything until the space part.
Skip all of the
book.
I was speaking with Defire in Spain, and because just like last month I saw him, and he helped me a lot with telling me about how multi-layered progression systems work.
Oh, cool.
Because that's what Defiance of the Fall is sort of most known for, you know, you get to the peak of one thing, and then you find out that one of his other things needs to catch up to get to things that then they can both level up. And that's why you're like, oh, how is he degrade or whatever when you know 1,000 chapters have passed? And it's because, you know, you just keep adding these layers, and one layer feeds into another layer, so people get hyped because they're like, okay, I haven't read Defiance of the Fall, right, but he you know, his bloodline or something reaches this peak, and then it means his axe now hits harder, even though, because they're not, you know, directly correlated, but you know, this one increases his strength, so now you know his axe is naturally stronger, and it's just everything feeds into each other and brings everything up. And so
there used to be this idle clicker that I played, something about like Fantasy Kingdoms, like this most stupid game. It was basically like an Excel sheet with graphics. But one thing it did really well is, just when you thought it got boring, it introduced a new system that made the base value, which is just more coins, go up even faster, yeah. right? So at the beginning, you would click, and then clicking wouldn't be enough anymore. So it would be in your system, you would automatically click, right? So like all this kind of shit. And then at the end, like it would be, well, you have like all these modifiers that stack on top of each other. And yeah, I totally get what he's saying, even though I haven't read it to the to that part either. But I wanted to say one more thing. You said you're writing, like maybe you're writing a male power fantasy with Reborn as a Demonic Tree. No.
No,
you are
not,
actually,
not really.
You're actually writing...
Female leads.
Yeah, two of them.
Yep. Yep. No, yeah, no, I like writing. To be honest, like I wouldn't want to write a female focus, you know, female lead focus story.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't, it's not quite my vibe, but I do very much like having a very present female lead POV. Mm-hmm. All of my stories, every single one of them is multi-POV with the other POV being the female side character. Yeah.
How do you make that work? I mean, like I guess I know, but I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
It works because it's a non-human trope. If you watch any non-human anything that's popular and you watch a non-human thing, there was actually an anime recently called like The Unwanted Undead Adventure or something that I watched. Mm. And basically guy becomes a ghoul in a dungeon, and within one episode, some female adventurer is like down in the dungeon and, you know, struggling to fight a mob, and he like saves her, and then she's like, oh, I'll buy you clothes, and like, you know, we'll escape together. And it's just a non-human trope where the male, it doesn't have to be male, but the male, you know, non-human lead lacks agency, right? And that's what's fun. You know, they can't go to the human kingdom because they'll be shot. They can't, you know, use these holy spells because they'll die from them. They can't talk in entry. He can't talk. He can't do this. He can't, you know, whatever. So I actually had a comment where it was like the most fun progression system in Tree is actually him figuring out how to speak.
Yeah.
You know, very slowly throughout the book. It's not till like 170 chapters in or something that he finally gets some form of telepathy, but it's not really telepathy. And, you know, people really liked that. And so Stella is basically a contrast character where she's the one with all the agency, but not the power. So she's weak. She needs help. She needs, you know, items. She needs Ashlock support. But she has all the agency. She's the one who can go into town. She's the one who can do things. So when we switch to her POV, or any human POV really in the novel, but especially hers, it doesn't feel like filler. It doesn't feel like you're just setting up a character to have a cool MC moment and then just be killed. It feels very much like she's your agency character. She's the more relatable one. Like Ashok's relatable, you know, he's like, everyone wants to sleep a lot. Everyone wants to, you know, just vibe around and be a tree. But if he was the only POV, can you imagine if he was the only POV and we just didn't have any stellar POVs? It just wouldn't be anywhere near as good because it needs more relatability. And even though Stella's a female, you know, lead character and not a male lead character, she's very relate, you know, she's a lot more.
Yeah.
It also helps. I can describe scenes with things like legs. You know, I can be like, she moves her arm, she fight, you know, fight scenes are a lot easier to write from a human POV than it is from a tree POV. Because a tree POV, it feels like you're just reading a strategy game where he's like, right, I just place things here, do this, because he can't move.
Mm.
Whereas from Stella, you know, it's like, you feel a lot more in the action. You feel like, so that's why actually this whole second, last third of book two, I think, is written from Stella's POV, and no one complained. There was literally, I think, 30,000 or 40,000 words almost in a row that was Stella's POV, with like very vague one chapter every now and then that was Ashlock's, like maybe half the chapter's Ashlock's POV or something. No one complained. Everyone was like, "This is great," because she's been established as that. You know, she's a very very important POV character.
Yeah, because it's also an issue with many of the Dungeon Core books, right? Like I said, like all the non-human MCs, and most of the Dungeon Core books kind of like just create an avatar real quick and be done with it. I always found that a bit cheaty. It's like, hey, it's a Dungeon Core novel. Like, you're supposed to make the Dungeon Core fun and not, you know, have a human person who is also a dungeon master. That's a different novel, right? But I do think dungeon master novels are actually also kind of fun.
I think non-human novels are great. I read them all the time, love them, but I love their tropes, I love everything, but it's they are often written by less skilled authors, is what I've noticed with non-human books. They're often, because what often happens is an author will write a non-human book because they like non-human books, and then they'll realize that they're better at writing than they thought, and then they go and write a male lead power fantasy and make more money doing so. So usually their non-human book was their starter book. You know, it was the one that they wrote. An example is Blue Core and Power of Mage. You know, that's just an example. The author literally in his author note at the end of Blue Core said, hey, look, this was planned to be 100,000 words long and it's gone to 700,000 words. It's a complete mess. I've no idea what I'm doing. But here, look, I'm going to go write another novel. It's called Paranoid Mage. Go check it out. And then he linked to it and it ended up being one of the fastest growing, you know, novels on Roared. And that's just an example of just someone who's like, oh yeah, I wrote a non-human book. And then I realized I could actually write something better than this. That's less restrictive. And that, it's easy. It's easier to do storytelling from a human POV sometimes.
Which, I feel called out. By the way, I'm still thinking about when I'm done with the rewrite, doing another round of ads. And I really do think about making a series of ads where it's like reborn as a saintly laptop or she who fights with viruses or return of the data bound.
Those work.
Yeah.
I did a lot of meme ad campaigns that reference other books and did wars meme.
I think we can talk about this real quick before we get into to the book that you love and then the shout outs. People really thought that that war of yours with actors was real. Remember that?
You see, that's the awkward part because we kind of didn't think about the fact that like the one, people would actually care that much, and two, that they weren't in on the meme. Yeah, because it was just an inside joke between us.
Yeah.
So, which in hindsight is not that great to put out in a public light. And the issue was, an actor's can attest to this, my fan base was a lot more rabid than his fan base was in protecting which novel they thought was better. I received a single, I think throughout the entire war, I've received a single DM or maybe one or two messages where someone's like, hey, don't be mean to actors. His book is great. Actus received literally dozens of 0.5s, DMs. He had Patreons. He had literal Patreons being like, I'm going to unsub because, you know, I like both your books and everything, but, you know, I can't stand that you are, you know, trying to be mean to Tree or something. It was crazy. I went into his Patreon comments to defend him. I was like, no, this was a joke. It's fine. And they were like, yeah, still mad. And I was like,
no.
It was insane. And then, to draw the hatred away from actors, we started running ads where it said that we'd made up and we're friends now. And that the new enemy was Minute Mage, which is another friend of mine, Reg. And Reg's rating dropped from like 4.4 to 4.1 or something. It was something like 25 0.5 stars during the course of that ad run. He got absolutely just obliterated. It was crazy. People would take it really, the ad war thing, really seriously. It was also but the thing is, we ran them because they were so high CTR at the time. Yeah. Like 3 CTR, which was quite high, like 3% CTR. Like they were working, and our views, we were, you know, it was like in the there was a Reddit post made by someone that hit the top of, had like 300-400 upvotes that hit the top of Progression Fantasy and put us more on the, you know, so it was like the drama and the controversy. We were feeding into it because it was actually working. So although our ratings tanked and we got the hate, well, I didn't, you know, the other two did.
they got hate
mail, and I just kind of vibed and watched my views jump up by like 5 to 10K views a day. It was
took a nap
for a while. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the working title is like reject the titles for the series and then like, because I really don't want any drama.
The
flower.
Some people have made that mistake. There was one guy who made an ad where it was referencing Tree. It was like, why read Tree when you could read this? I think was the ad. And he didn't run it by anyone and it was just out of the blue. And I can't remember who it was, but his novel got nuked as well. And then you pulled that out quite quickly. But you know, because when you have a fan base, I never told them to do anything. I never. Mm-hmm. I just ran these ads, and they just went and did their own. They formed their own interpretation of what needed to be done, and then went to war. And it was not great. But
so, what's it feel to be a godlike being?
Godlike being on Roared.
I mean, it's a bit like this, right? So someone reads the scripture, and the scripture gets misinterpreted, and well, there you go.
It's actually just like in Tree, you know, there's all these misunderstandings between the character, you know.
Yeah.
Ashlock says, yo, don't kill the people. And they're like, ah, he doesn't, you know, he just doesn't want those people to die, but everyone else to die. And then they go and kill everyone else. And it's,
yeah. Okay. What's a book that you love and why is it awesome?
What is a book I love? This is where I'll bring up a controversial one, which would be Blue Core. And I haven't read it for a long time. And the reason it's important, it's one of my favorite novels in a way, is because it taught me everything I needed that made Tree a success.
Okay.
I read Blue Core, and I think it was like the greatest thing I'd ever read. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I was really into Dungeon Core novels at the time, mm-hmm. and I was reading it. And it, as the author mentioned, his author note saying, you know, he mm-hmm. made some mistakes and things. It was the most perfect. You could watch the novel as it was progressing, mm-hmm. basically become a sum of its own problem, like piling on its own issues mm-hmm. that it had brought in. So the biggest example, which saved Tree a lot, was because this was also in Tree of Aeons, mm-hmm. right? Is that he can see and knows everything that is occurring within his field of like power, like mm-hmm. within his domain. He knows everything that's happening. Mm-hmm. So in Tree of Aeons, he has multiple brains that manages this, kind of like a mm-hmm. surveillance system. So he, which becomes a problem later on because chapters just devolve into just reports of basically there was a war in the north. This and no one can sneak up on him. Mm-hmm. There can be no surprises. There can be nothing because he saw the guy land on the shore 10 weeks ago, and now he's getting close to the tree. You know, there's no threats anymore. And Blue Core was the same. He became the size of a continent, and he could just see everything and knew everything all at once. Mm-hmm. And you can't show that in text. Right, mm-hmm. You can't show omniscience. You can't show that in text because text is it goes one by one. In visual medium, it'd be easier. In mm-hmm. you know, if it was a film or something, it'd be easier to sort of show that he can see everything because you could do like a top down view or something.
Yeah, like in a text, map just doesn't work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. So what ends up happening is he just sort of each chapter will just focus on something, right? Mm-hmm. But then at the end or at the start of the next chapter, it would be like, so he was, you know, he was in this conversation with someone and doing something, but he was also conducting a war over here at the same time and doing all of this. And so you don't know where, you know, it's a very inhuman experience to read about, you know, because you don't know where your focus is supposed to be. And it just ruins everything, right? So that was just one example of something that it taught me. It also taught me not to have like a dungeon fairy sort of, I think I had a dungeon fairy, you know, sort of like side fairy thing. Or voice, I can't remember what it was, but yeah, I can't remember all the things it taught me, but it taught me a lot about.
What do you think about the dungeon fairies? Because like the fairy psychic, they're often introduced because people like want to have dialogue.
Yes,
and then they just never do anything with it. Or what's the issue?
Yeah, so dungeon fairies is a trope because as a writer, Stella's basically. A rehashed Tree is basically a rehashed Dungeon Core.
Yeah.
I realized Dungeon Cores don't work because they're once they become too powerful, they're mm-hmm. so underground that they can't be defeated. So I brought him up ground. So even when he's strong, he's exposed. Right, yeah. That's the idea. So Tree is exposed. He's an exposed Dungeon Core. And then Stella is basically the dungeon fairy, just reskinned to have a lot more agency. Because the mm-hmm. issue of the fairies is even if you make them very much a character, they're mm-hmm. tied literally almost by a shackle to the mm-hmm. Dungeon Core. They're not their own person. They can't go do their own thing. Whereas Stella, for example, is her completely own person. She can, you know, she has her own backstory, her own family. She, you know, she goes off sometimes for a year at a time to do things. So she still gives that, you know, the feel. She still, you know, sometimes comes and not info dumps, but you know, comes and gives information, fills Ashlock in on things, mm-hmm. you know, that he wouldn't be able to figure out otherwise. But they're learning together. You know, they're learning. They have the same affinity. I did that mm-hmm. deliberately so they could sort of learn it together.
Yeah,
I think dungeon fairies aren't a good trope, but they're hard to. You have to really find a very, very big workaround to them because you need someone with dialogue. You need that. Otherwise, it's you need a sidekick character thing, and it's very hard to justify why someone from the world would make friends with just a glowing gem in a dungeon and just hang around for some reason and talk to it all the time. You know, it's hard to justify that.
Yeah, most people, what they do is they they humanize the Dungeon Core, like we said. Like for example, like I'm not saying this is like bad or anything. That may have sounded like this earlier, but especially since I'm bringing up a book that I really like, Dungeon Tour Guide, which is basically about hey, what if a Dungeon Core was actually chill? And
I've read Dungeon Tour Guide mm-hmm. and I've spoken to Cypher a lot about Dungeon Tour Guide, so mm-hmm. yeah, and you know, yeah. But yeah, what were your thoughts on it? What the problem was that you have got a human avatar?
No. I don't think it was that problematic. Like, it's I I also don't want to say it's lazy or anything. It's just something I wouldn't necessarily do because it is a Dungeon Master novel now, right? So this is not bad. It's just different. And I don't think there's a problem with it.
Yeah. His whole idea was that he was almost trying to be a more on-market dungeon core novel, right? The idea was is that because it's by chapter two or something, and he becomes, you know, he's a human. He's basically just a guy. Yeah. He's just bound to the dungeon, basically. Yeah. You know, he was like, oh, it's more marketable. You know, it's a male lead, but it's a dungeon core with a avatar, and he realizes that now. You know, he's aware of that issue.
Okay, cool. That's a book that you loved, and why it was awesome, or why you learned something from it, I guess.
Yeah,
cool.
I did enjoy it when I read it, but it has an elevated tier to me because it basically helped Tree be what it is. You know, cool. I learned so much from reading it about non-human books and everything. So it's a pretty solid, pretty well done ish until the last book, Dungeon Core novel, and then it obviously taught me a lot. So that's why I like it.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Hey, now if we're not for our favorite part, shoutouts.
Oh, well, do I have to shout someone out?
Yeah. Who do you want to shout out, and why is it Actus?
Who do I want to shout out? Shout out to Godclads.
Godclads.
Godclads, recent Amazon release by Mammal. He's a really funny dude, and it was very interesting. He tried to release Godclads as... basically, it was a really good example of why you should just go for your market. Yeah. Because it was an experiment, almost. It was released to completely hide the fact he was non-human, right? That he's a ghoul. So the MC is a ghoul, right? Yeah. I don't think it even says it in the synopsis. The MC is a ghoul. So if that's a selling point, there you go. But when you're trying to market it as a, you know, just a system apocalypse, cyberpunk, you know, just a guy, don't worry about it. And then you go in and the very first opening line is his brother's flesh had never tasted so good. Yeah. You know, you're suddenly like, wait a second. I've been bamboozled. This is not it. I think it should get some more love. But yeah, it's he's a cool dude and a cool novel.
Quick rant about Godclads. I mean, Mammal was on here. If you've listened to Mammal's episode, you know what to expect from the book. It is hands down one of the best world building I have ever seen in any novel, period. And I like strange novels. Like I like Max Gladstone, and he's easily on the level of Max Gladstone when it comes to world building. It's arcane, it's eldritch, it is completely out there, and he combines things into ideas that you would have never thought about.
I'm scared how his mind works.
Everyone is. His best rated comment on Amazon is, I'm worried for the mind of this author. Yeah. And it's 5 stars. It's been described as, it's the cyberpunk Malazan Book of the Fallen that I didn't know I needed, 11 out of 10. It is such a good book, and you should totally give it a try, because he deserves all the love and no longer to do the death march.
Yeah. No, he'll death march until it's over. But yeah, no. Shout out to that, and then obviously shout out to my friend's books, like Actus's, you know, Rise of the Living Forge recently. Melis just had one of his first ever co-written books, Seth, The Abyssal Assassin, released, I think, today or yesterday on Amazon. So a new book. And then Minute Mage, shout out to Minute Mage. shout out to, Immortality Starts Generosity, as I mentioned earlier in the episode. My friend pulled us. It comes out in March, I think. So, that's a great book. That's a genuine. I read back when I was still a reader. I read that book, and I was still a very small author. And Plutus was a very nice guy to me when I was still small.
I have so much to carry to catch up on. For me, like I sometimes also do shout outs in this part, but basically I want to shout out basically every single book of every author that's ever been on here. Because I love all of them. They're all good. Period. But maybe you should check out Brian Norton's podcast. He's a really, really good dude. Okay. This has been that. Exclamation. Thank you so much for coming in. We're going to continue talking for a few more hours.
Oh, boy. Oh, no. I have a chance to edit. No.
In the second half of the podcast that you can find on Patreon. But if you don't want or can't join, that's also fine. it's just the After Dark stuff that's on there, you know, nothing important. We're going to be talking about world domination and the really, really cool shit.
Wait, we aren't?
Yeah, of course.
I thought we were. I thought I was on the script.
Oh, no, it wasn't. That's a shh. Don't spoil. Don't spoil. No, joke aside, please do like, subscribe, and follow. It helps me out a lot. If you're on Spotify and on iOS or Apple Podcasts, leaving a rating and also a review would be very nice. I've recently heard that's very important for podcasts on there. And yeah, expect some really cool new shit that's coming out soon. I've lured some friends of mine and authors into a big group, and we're going to be talking about characterization in lit RPG and progression fantasy. So go check out all the other stuff that's on my channel. I think you're going to enjoy most of it. That being said, thank you for coming, and I'll see you next time.